Georgia, I don't think I ever really spent. I grew up in Southern California, and you know, actually not very far from all the actors there. But I never really thought of. I was in high school. The nice thing about Bob Dylan was he didn't have such a great voice, so every high school kid thought he could become a star also. He had just a guitar and write some clever lyrics, and you could. But anyway, so I don't think I ever really thought about that, like movies or directing. I never really. And writing, when I was young, I used to write. But I never really thought of writing commercial. I never really thought of, like, I just thought of writing as like almost like a self-realization process.
So did you ever think about what you were going to be when you grew up?
Never. No. No, I don't think I ever thought of it. I mean, when I was young, of course, you know, you say what your parents want you to say, you're just a child. But once I was old enough to actually sort of speak with my own voice at all, no, that's the last thing in the world I ever thought about was a career.
Well, did you think you were going to take a religious path, or?
No, it wasn't so much. No, I just can't remember ever thinking about a career.
Yeah.
I think intuitively I knew I would never have one. My brothers were joking. I think they even joked, the boys were joking when I was in Florida. See, I'm sure, you know, after it only took them like, you know, 40 years, you finally got a real job. Anyone, did the devotee say that, or was this my...
The devotee said that?
Yeah, my brother said it too. But, I never thought of it. I met the devotees, I just had this vague... When I was in high school, I don't know if I told you this, you stand for a second, I hate to keep you on standing. After I graduated high school, and, I can't remember what it was, right, that first summer or the next summer. I kept having this, like, business, you know, because you lay in bed at night, you think, you know, if you're a thinker, then you lay down at night, you do a little thinking, you go to sleep, if you're a thinker. And so, I went through this period where for months, I don't know how long it lasts, but every night I'd go to bed, just before I went to bed, I kept thinking that I would somehow receive some knowledge, and I would teach the world how they could become free from death. I just kept thinking, and I just saw myself, and that's what I just knew that I would receive that, and that would be my life. My life would be to teach people how they could become free from death. And that was after I graduated high school, I just kept thinking about it. I remember for... Because before that, it's interesting because, you know, how people just don't think about death? I remember around that time, somehow I'd lay in bed at night, and I would force my mind to confront the fact that my body's going to die, and I would just fix my mind on it, and just, like, strip away all the denial, all the pretension, and you know, death. And then, of course, I lived in a materialistic world in which, I mean, we weren't Christians or anything, but the world, you know, you died, it's just death. And I remember it shocked me at the core of my existence that I kept thinking about it. My material existence just shattered. Mm-hmm. And it shocked me so deeply, the idea of a material life where you're going to die. It just seemed useless. So then, after that, I went through kind of like that shock and then really thinking about it. And then I got that message in my heart that, no, you will receive knowledge that will free you from death and they will free others. And then, it's funny, just Krishna came to me in different ways, and of course, nothing wrong with me. But no, I never. And then I had this, this is where I draw what came out. I remember just thinking, I had some vague idea that I would just travel around the world teaching spiritual knowledge or something. That's, no, but as far as the material career, no, I never, I can't think. I don't think I ever once seriously thought about a material career. Then when I was a householder, I was preaching, and then everyone else, there was a time in this conference where every temple in America was like selling incense, spiritual incense, and so I don't think I should do it, especially because like, there's some kind of like disease, some kind of flu around the temple. I was the only one in the temple on my feet. And Krishna, really, this is where I took some, you know, I was a temple president in Houston, I was a householder. Some kind of flu went around. And literally, every devoted, like 15 devotees in the temple, and I was the only one who was actually like walking. Did a proper walk. I was the only one. And so the temple economy just completely crashed because there was no one going out to Sankirtan. I didn't know what to do. So I got all the incense and finally caved in. And so I went out one day and I actually sold all the incense, made a few $1,000, which in those days was like enough for months, you know, to run the temple. But I was just so miserable. I was just like, it was like Krishna, just like, it's almost like he showed me hell. Like that life of doing business, I mean, it just absolutely was not meant for that. It was just like, I can't even describe how miserable I was. And I just knew I can't do this pretty much. It was like, the death of me. And that's why I couldn't have been a householder. It was like, you know, apart from everything else, the whole lifestyle, if you have kids, you get a job, and you, I mean, it's just, it was not an option for me. It would have just, it would have been the death of me. I was meant to do what I'm doing. I was meant to preach Krishna consciousness. And yeah, it's good just to get in touch again with our original inspiration and revelation, our ecstatic conversion experience. I mean, I was just meant to teach Krishna consciousness. I remember, I must have told you, I remember just as a little child, like 2 years old, just sitting down and meditating on what was beyond the sky. And I remember like just meditating on that, like what's beyond the sky. Yeah, I'll try. And then see what, I'm actually here, I have to go to Brazil. You know, it's just a trip, but I'm going to get, you know, within maybe like, you know, about 6 weeks, I'm going to get totally wiped out, clean, just blown into bits by this editor, which is good, though. I mean, but actually, she's good. It'll be good. It will be. I think it really will be a course in writing. It's really good to, you know, to get some professional training. I don't know if she has an editor or not. But in the Pandavas book, it's funny, now that I'm being absorbed in it, it's just like, it's all encompassing. It's just so, when I really get into my work and I'm getting into it now, it's like, it just is my life. It's just completely becomes everything. Just do this. Oh my God, it requires so much. You have to just like organization because you have all of these characters. Like Bhagavadatta. I mean, have you ever heard of Bhagavadatta? You see? That's wrong. Bhagavadatta was a very important warrior in the Mahabharata. He fought for the Kurus, not for the Pandavas. He knew Pandu. I think he was a Kirata. Like there was a Kirata, kind of like these Mongol, Indian, Mongol mixtures. That kind of, at a certain point, they kind of took over the eastern Himalayas and part of northern Bengal. So how to depict these people, you know, like they had to go over all the geography, like where they all come from and what they were like, and all the alliances, and then you have to work it in an earlier story, because you can't just suddenly have a battle with a long list of people. You have to understand, like, who were these people, and, what were the basic sort of weave it through the stories. There's so many characters, and then there's so much to do. Oh, yeah, thank you. But it's just all-encompassing, you know, the law of the earth. It really is a whole world. It's just like nowadays, if you follow the news, there's certain political leaders in this country and that country, and that's what it is. It's like a whole, it's a whole world of political leaders and alliances and marriages and children. It's just a whole world. It's a whole history. Krishna's so proud. When I read the story, it's just, it's have a sense, like your editing, right? Your editing is trying to just know what to leave in, what to take out. Just a sense of what will work and what won't work. Totally the wrong impression. Arjuna's really a word. And it's funny, because it's so funny, because we always deal with the Arjuna and the drops of bow, I will not fight. So for us, Arjuna is just the pure devotee who doesn't want to fight. Maybe that's the Arjuna we mostly know. But Arjuna, you see him like in Mahabharata, he's like the kshatriya. He's very nice. He's a gentleman. He's really an interesting figure. Because I try to get past that, the bewildered Arjuna, and really get to know the other one. But he's always a gentleman. In fact, even scholars say he's very chivalrous. And see, Arjuna kind of exemplifies the chivalrous warrior. And he's not a king. He's very much the faithful younger brother. And Yudhishthira. He's really just Krishna's friend and the warrior and the great chivalrous warrior and Krishna's friend. He's not King Arthur, he's Lancelot. Arjuna is just, there's something almost like boyish about Arjuna. I've been reading about him so much. You know what I mean? There's something really like, almost like youthful. Because he's not, he's just youthful, and he's really just this great, if you think about the great qualities of Arjuna, it's just this amazing combination of someone that's kind of humble, and but when he gets into a fight, he just like, it's all the interesting scenes where like he's going around now before Yashomeda, trying to be nice to everybody, restraining himself, and just trying to control it. Then sometimes they cross a line and he just starts to get angry and then he starts to punish them. It's just the great archer, Jim. You had to really get past, it's really like, I'm just trying to understand these people. They have to become like, I really have to somehow get to know them by their mercy. That's what I feel like. That's the realization I've had, that all these eternal figures, Kunti, the prophet of Krishna, but just all the figures in the Mahabharata, they're eternal. And I feel that I have to somehow or other please them and get to know them, so that they reveal themselves to me. I can't force myself upon them. I can't force myself into their confidence. But somehow I actually have this vision that all these great personalities, they're watching me. And sort of inviting me to come and they'll tell me their story. But somehow Krishna, it's such a wonderful thing. I feel like Krishna somehow or other it's the greatest thing of my life. That Prabhupada Krishna have somehow given me this service. And I feel that because somehow the service is coming down through the pure devotee, that all these great personalities will actually somehow, some spiritual platform, take me into their confidence and let me understand who they really are. Arjuna, Bhima, twins. Yudhisthira, of course. And that's what I want to do. I want to show the world who they really are and clear up some of the misunderstandings that come through . It's interesting because you look at the Mahabharata tradition, it's rather a mixture, because some things are a little, right? But some things are, I mean, there's so many great souls that narrated the Mahabharata, there's so many great souls, and so many great poets that are just extraordinary spiritual and even literary talent has gone into it. So it's like a balance for me. I have to honor all the great souls that passed this work on from generation to generation for hundreds of generations. Hundreds of generations. At the same time, I have a mission which is coming down through Prabhupada and Krishna. I have to just go ahead and I have to tell the story as I think it really happened. At the same time, honoring the tradition. At least that part of the tradition that I feel is really coming from the great souls. But it's amazing if you think about it that, I'm working, I have my little mystic tool here, the computer, and I have this Sanskrit text, the Mahabharata, and it's something which has been preserved for hundreds of generations. I mean, real people who are just as real as I was, there I am. I mean, all kinds of people telling this story and hearing it and then repeating it in just thousands and thousands of different places. For thousands of years, people just telling this story. Now the whole thing somehow, here it is. I'm not going to bed now. I feel like, as I say, the luckiest guy in the world.
That's so special.
Huh?
It's so special. Such a monumental task. And that we're here to witness. I mean, really, that's so special that we're here to witness you creating, you starting it, just beginning that. And sharing it with us, your realization. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I do love working on it. It's just, it really is a higher taste. Hmm. It'll keep me out of the streets. It'll keep me out of trouble for a while. It's so wonderful, isn't it, when you think about it? I mean, going through the Mahabharata, going through this whole Mahabharata, going through the Bhagavatam. That's what I do. I go to the database, I search, I put all the important characters in the Mahabharata. I search, I look at every verse in the Bhagavatam they're mentioned. Mm. And I create like a little try. After that, I create a profile on every character in the Mahabharata. The devotees, demons, everyone. It's all the verses in the Bhagavatam that talk about them. Mm. And I try to put together this composite picture. Sadhguru is very interesting. I told you about Sadhguru. Mm-hmm. Sadhguru, a very clear picture comes out because you have to sort of put it together. But they always say the same thing about Sadhguru. He's extraordinarily handsome. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the Pandavas are handsome, but the two twins are just like ridiculously good looking. Yeah, they're all attractive, handsome men, but the twins are just like ridiculously good looking. And of the two of them, Sahadev is interesting. He's the one that's always very much attached to the family. Like, he's sort of really attached to Kunti, the younger boy, like, really attached to Kunti, and like the Raja Surya sacrifice, he's the one that takes care of people. He even just read another verse. It just keeps coming out again and again about Sahadev, that is like, he's like really into the family. Always, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Really good looking, and also very eloquent, great speaker. Like in the Bhagavatam, at the Raja Surya, when Shishupala insults Krishna, someone has to defend Krishna, it's Sahadev that stands up and gives a powerful speech. So, like, you know, incredibly good looking, great speaker, and just really into the family. Interesting character, isn't he? These are real people. Nakula Sahadev. I mean, just the twins, isn't it? I mean, you could just write so many books just about them. I mean, they're such great souls. Just the twins. That's what they do. That somehow or other get past to like the, you know, stereotypes you see, and just really find these people. I mean, the five Pandavas, you know, they're all great souls. They're all intimate associates of Krishna. Yudhishthira is very interesting. Light complexion. It's like an aristocratic Roman nose. Anyway. Yeah, this love, this devotional service are really... I almost feel like I'm, there's a sense in which I feel that just like I'm back in my real life again. Like I had to make these forays. I felt it as a service. And also, of course, I enjoyed it out of necessity. But like teaching a class at the University of Florida, something I really enjoy doing. But there's something about my work on this that I really feel like I'm home. You know, it's like you go out on a journey and you do important things that have to be done and enjoy doing it, but somehow it's like coming home to this work in the Mahabharata. And of course, even that opened one from Krishna and Vrindavan. But in terms of service, it's just, how can I say that? It's like a feast. Because whatever God-given abilities I have, they're all just challenged to the max. It's just, you know, it's just like for someone that wants to write like this, it's just an ocean of devotional service. It's just a complete ocean of devotional service. It's so rich. It's so unlimited. There's just so much to do, and it's also pleasing, and there's just so, it's like being hungry, you'll find an orchard, there's all these beautiful fruits, and there's like more fruits than you could ever eat. There's just so much in the Mahabharata, so much devotional service, so much, there's just such a great story to tell. And so much historical analysis to do. It's better than reading news. Because it's the real news. And that's why, for me, it's like these are like real political historical events. And you start to like get into the present of the Mahabharata, so you're really there. And it's just breaking news, headlines, you know, political events, things going on, real people. huge dwarf review that it's just these big, you know, all these great personalities. Anyway, it's late, I guess I should go. So we're going.